Greetings. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. It is my show. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much for listening. The phone number, if you want to call in, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I asked at the end of the last hour what you guys think. Should we break apart? Should there be a great divorce? I want to talk about the great divorce. And to begin that, I'm going to talk with Lance, who is calling in about this very issue. Lance, welcome to the program. What's your thoughts?
First thing, my condolences, and not really condolences, but my heartfelt everything for your wife. I heard you the other day in reference to that.
Thank you.
And second, I give my yes, sir. And at the end, I can give you my phone number. If you and your kid want to meet up sometime and talk history, we can do it. But as far as the country, it's coming. And I don't think there's any way to avoid it just simply by the fact what happened with our last election and how all that's being manipulated right now. And I'd like to refer to Ken Burns just the other day, and I think you may have even spoke about that.
Yeah, that guy's lost his mind.
An interview somewhere. I'm sorry?
I said that guy's lost his mind.
True, but he did say that the United States wholly is looking down the loaded barrel of a gun for civil war. And regretfully enough, I think truly our political system is truly broken. And I don't know who or what person can come in and bring the divide together. I don't, you know, it's just hard to envision.
Yeah.
Just simply by the fact all of what is going on.
You're right. It is hard to envision at this point, particularly when the loudest voices in the room right now, and thank you very much for that, the loudest voices in the room seem to think it's inevitable. But I got to tell you, I don't think the system is broken. I think the people running it are broken. And those people eventually age out. Yes, let's be very honest here. On the issue of the great divorce, increasingly, particularly those who spend their time watching TV news and are on social media, they feel more divided than ever. But I got to be honest with you. It is a sentiment that is not felt by the people furthest removed from being online. It is a phenomenon almost unique to those who spend their time on social media and watching television news, particularly Fox and MSNBC and the other very partisan newscasts. I don't think we're going to get to the point where we actually do break apart. I don't think we can. Someone the other day, I forget now who it was. Was it Carol? I can't remember. Pointed out that in New York, you had several million people voted for Joe Biden, but also voted for Donald Trump. What if you cede the left New York, largely because of New York City? What do you do with the rest of that state? Do red states get it? Because the state is remarkably red, except in the New York City area. And they're just so dominant population-wise, they offset the rest of the state. If you think it is inevitable, you sometimes will take inevitable actions to make it happen. But I don't know that we're going to, and I have thoughts. I actually have some thoughts on what should or should not happen. I don't think the United States of America should break apart. There are days where I think it should. I'll be honest. There are some days I think, you know what, let's go on and have a divorce. But really, I don't think so. One, I don't think it's practical. As a buddy of mine, there's actually an email discussion I'm a part of right now going on. I will read you from a friend of mine who I know will listen to the show. I will not attribute any of this to anyone there, but he's one of the wisest people I know in these things. And he says, national divorce isn't happening for a host of reasons, not least of which is impracticality and inevitably bloody process, which would make the first civil war look like a short and manageable affair. So we should set it aside, except for hypothetical and illustrative purposes, in which roles I think it does a great service. That service is this. A republic requires a functionally republican citizenry, and our republic does not presently have that. At present, We expect our republic to exist with a combination of Republican citizens plus a critical mass of non-Republican or even anti-Republican citizenry. The critical mass of the latter possesses and is willing to use the mechanisms of violence and the powers of the state, which means, in turn, the republic isn't going to work. And that's true. I can understand that there are those who are ready to break apart the country. But it is neither feasible nor practical. And for all of the people who say, well, the military's on our side and we got all the guns. Okay. The other side has the cities and the supply chain. And the cities and the supply chain matter as much, if not more, than the military and the guns. Because you may have parts of the military, you don't have it all, nor do you have all of the major weaponry, much of which is not inside this country right now. But also the ports. You don't have the ports, except maybe the port of Jacksonville, the port of Miami, the port of Savannah. You don't have the port of Los Angeles. You don't have the port of New York. You don't have those ports to be able to import goods. In fact, right now, one of the supply chain crises we're having is because of that. But more importantly, you don't have the will of people to do it. What we need in this country is actually a real appreciation for federalism in ways neither side has. There's this bro culture on the right now, national populism that I think they're calling it right now, where they want to control Washington and impose conservative values on the country because they believe conservatives have conserved nothing and the left has imposed their values on everyone. And really what we should be striving for is a radical federalism where if California wants to have abortion and gay marriage and drag queen story hour, let them. And if Georgia wants to have no abortion and encourage traditional marriage and no drag queens, let them. Georgia will eventually have more kids and breed out California. But the reality is, let California be California, let Georgia be Georgia. Both sides right now, at an activist level, funded by national groups, feel compelled to impose their will on other people in this country, where most people in this country, the overwhelming majority of the people in this country, just want to be left alone. I got to be honest. I think if you live in a city where the majority of the people in the city want to have a drag queen story hour, go do it. I don't have to go, and neither do you. But I also think if you live in a city where a majority of people don't think it's appropriate, the city should be able to say, nope, sorry, we don't do that here. And it should ultimately be at the state level, not the city level, because cities are subservient to the states. But I think that you have to be allowed to live in an area that reflects your morality. I live in Middle Georgia, and Middle Georgia is fairly pro-life. There had been no abortion clinic, and one has started, and there really isn't a lot that can be done to stop it. I think the state of Georgia should be able to pass a law that says you can't have an abortion in Georgia. And if the left wants to start a nonprofit where a woman who wants an abortion can have the costs of travel covered to get to California to have an abortion, let her. And Georgia can't penalize her. And if someone who lives in California is appalled that California is a pro-abortion, godless state, they should be able to pack up and move somewhere else without penalty. That's the way federalism should work. You know, up until the passage of the 14th Amendment, and really even until the 1900s, states had state religions. The federal government under the First Amendment was required to be neutral and stay out of it, but states had affiliations. A lot of southern states had Baptist affiliations. Maryland had a strong affiliation with the Catholic Church. Part of our problem here is the 14th Amendment. And my radical point is that in the 21st century, we might want to get rid of the 14th Amendment. It's not going to happen, mind you. But in the world that exists, not the world that some want, this whole idea of we just need to break apart the country sounds good to a faction of people. who haven't thought out the real consequences of it and how it would work. It would be a very bloody affair. And conservatives would have the rural parts of the country and a lot of guns. And the left would have the cities and the supply chains. And they would starve out the right. And it would be a bloody, bloody affair. Also, it's totally hypothetical. This country's not going to break apart. You may feel like it, and I need to say something lovingly, gingerly, softly. If you think the country is going to break apart, if you're really concerned that we're headed towards a national divorce because everybody hates each other, go out into your city and make your city a better place. And get offline and turn off the TV. Get out of politics. Get into culture. I gave a speech in Delaware this weekend. Great time. Been Newark, Delaware, local Republican Party. Really, really just wonderful people. Peter, I know you're listening. I would love to come back. It was a lot of fun. We didn't expect to get paid. They gave me a nice little stipend for coming up there. One of the things that I told him is, you know, the prophet Daniel, the book of Daniel, he's reading Jeremiah 29, which is one of my favorite passages of scripture. Talked about it on this program, where God says you're going to be in exile for 70 years. And this is the word of God through the prophet Isaiah, through the prophet Jeremiah, saying, you know what? Get a house, get married, start a family, grow a garden, live as if you're going to be there. Commit to that location because you're in exile there. And seek the welfare of the city in which you're in exile, and there you'll find your welfare. Pray for it, and there you'll find your welfare. And I think the people who are committed to the idea of a national divorce are the people who need to go find their battered women's shelter, and they need to work there. They need to find their local food bank and go volunteer. They need to go stand in line at the local soup kitchen and serve the homeless. Because they've become so fixated on politics and division, they have lost touch with what's happening in the real world of America, where most people are raising their families and living life and not worried about some sort of divorce coming, not worried about breaking apart the country. You know, we people rushed headlong into the Civil War. They didn't think of the consequences. Up until what, 2011, 2012, the majority of people killed in military conflict in this country were still killed in the Civil War. So many people died in the Civil War. Whole families split up. Is that what you really want? Maybe instead of rushing headlong into it and trying to stake out your stand, you should be working to keep the country together. And how do you keep the country together? Seek the welfare of the city in which you're in exile and pray for it, and there you will find your welfare. And maybe get out of national politics for a little while. Everybody's got to have an opinion on stuff, and everybody has an opinion on this, but I got to tell you, it's not going to work out the way you think it is. It never does. And I don't care which way you think it's going to work. It's not going to work exactly that way. But it's going to be bad for everyone. We can all be sure of that. I would encourage the left and the right, though, to understand that while you're at loggerheads over issues, that Washington should not matter as much as it does to you, and you should be using the 50 states as laboratories of democracy to experiment and see what actually works policy-wise with your ideas. And if you don't like what's happening with your state, move. One of the worst things the Supreme Court has ever done has essentially been to decide that the minority of the minority in a place can control the majority in morals and ethics and what's good and what's not and what can be done. And I think the more we respect each other's differences and say, if you don't like it, go somewhere where you're in the majority, then and only then Are we going to get back to a country where we realize Washington does not and should not matter as much as we've made matter it? Because the reality is that on a daily basis, your local city council and school board do far more to affect you day in and day out than Washington ever will. But as everyone fixates on Washington and makes it the be-all, end-all of civilization, we're more and more likely to have these conversations about whether or not we should break up the country. And instead of breaking up the country, we should be working in our communities to help the people in need. The way we use the internet, well, it's changed over the last decade. Security tools have mostly stayed the same. Aura provides complete digital security to help protect your online accounts, finances, devices, and so much more in an easy-to-use app. Most credit card companies do a good job of protecting you against fraudulent purchases. But what if a scammer files for unemployment in your name, or if your social media account's hacked? Aura's protection goes beyond your credit card. Between your photos, your finances, your devices, your connections, your world's more online than ever. You may have security systems in place for real life, but what about your online life? Aura can sound the alarm if your digital presence is at risk. They provide digital security protection. They keep your online finances, your personal information, and your technology safe from online threats. It's all-in-one protection for identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, so much more. With Aura, you'll get notified to fraud and threats fast. If your online accounts, your passwords are leaked online, you're going to be told by Aura. Like a lot of people, they won't tell you. Aura is easy to set up. All plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover stolen funds, and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. For a limited time, Aura is offering you guys 40% off plans when you visit aura.com/Eric, E-R-I-C-K. You go to aura.com/Eric, again, E-R-I-C-K. You get complete protection. You get savings of up to 40%. That's aura.com/Eric, aura.com/Eric. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. They are in Noonan, Georgia, and they want to help you nationwide. If you're in charge of the finances for your business and you want that business to grow, reach out to my friends, the Frost family at First Liberty Building and Loan. They can help you. They've been doing this since the 90s, y'all. Just as an aside here, I've known the Frost for a very long time. They are committed Christians, conservatives, just good people. But this is their business, and they have been making their own lending decisions since the 90s. They know what they're doing. So if you are having discussions internally at your business about growing, and you need, and we're talking six figures here, like you need $500,000 or higher, the Frosts are who you need to talk to. You don't need to go to Mega Bank International. Go to First Liberty Building and Loan, firstlibertyga.com. They really can help you, and not just help you get the money, but also help you make some wise decisions along the way as you get there. firstlibertyga.com is their website. Go spend 10 minutes with them. See if they're a good fit for you and you for them. FirstLibertyGA.com. Let me go to the phones. I want to take Ron's phone call. Ron, you are up next on the Eric Erickson Show. Welcome.
Yeah, Eric, thanks. And, you know, you touched on real solid of what I spoke to your screener about was that, you know, I'm old enough and I was born into a military family and traveled all over the U.S., and, you know, we've been in all 50 states, but the sovereignty of the states have changed to where the federal government's trying to run them all as the same cookie cutter, and where, you know, I choose to live in Pinehurst because I like to play them golf, you know.
Right.
Became a golf pro. But, I mean, I didn't go to Wyoming to do it. Not that Wyoming doesn't have good golf courses, but the winter's not, it's not very fun, you know. I don't think it was a divorce, but I just think that the sovereignty of the state need to come back.
Yes.
And people can choose to live and be around the people they want to be around.
1,000% yes. And the idea that one person can come in and undermine that, like, for example, this is one of my pet peeves, prayer in school. There are plenty of small schools around this country where they have graduation ceremony and prayer. And occasionally you get one atheist, usually it's the teacher, to come and say, "Hey, we're not allowed to do this." They've been doing it for however many years. And the one person is going to say, "No, you can't. We make it a majority of one." That's not the way it's supposed to work on these sorts of issues. And the federal government has gotten this wrong time and time again. And we need to swing the pendulum back and let each other, live in communities of our interest. And if you want to live in a godless, secular, hedonist society, go for it. Move to Los Angeles or San Francisco. And if you want to live in an area that loves the Lord and loves their neighborhood and likes it small and does not want drag queen story hour, do it. And we should all be able to do that and realize all we do is we go to Washington for the big issues that affect all of us. The war and the post office and federal taxes and, you know, those 18 things in Article 1, Section 8. Oh, my gosh. Radical thinking there that we should do what the founders intended. Funny how that works. Americans continue to navigate through multiple crises this year. We the People, a Bradley speaker series, offers insights and ideas on the current challenges we face from some remarkable organizations the Bradley Foundation supports. Visit bradleyfdn.org/liberty to watch their most recent episode. It features Stephen Suckup, author of The Dictatorship of Woke Capital, How Political Correctness Captured Big Business, an Encounter Books publication. In the episode, Suckup discusses the left's gradual takeover of corporate America and why the free market hasn't been able to prevent it, the dangerous impact of shareholder activism, and efforts to push back on it. That's Bradley, with an L-E-Y at the end, fdn.org/liberty to watch the video. New episodes debut weekly. Go back often, subscribe to their YouTube channel to be notified when a new episode is posted. That's bradleyfdn.org/liberty.
You know, Ron, her last caller, golf pro, I committed to play golf this Friday with somebody I met. So for those of you who aren't familiar, every year I auction off for Children's Healthcare of Atlanta the right to drink from my bourbon collection. And we do barbecue and bring in the assorted really good bottles of bourbon. I have a lot of bourbon. In fact, I found some bottles I didn't realize I had. And just like the five of them combined are about $7,000. It's absurd. Five bottles of bourbon. And I bring in really good rare bourbons that I have, some of which I've forgotten that I have. And auction this off, and all the money goes to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. Well, did this a while back, and one of the guys who's there, Jeff, we have committed to go play golf on Friday. Y'all need to understand, I am bad, and Ron, being a golf pro, reminds me, I am, the closer I get to Friday, the more intimidated I get by the idea of going to play golf with someone, because I am terrible. And I know people say they're bad golfers, but y'all, I don't even keep a score, I'm so bad. I score by how few balls I've lost in nine holes. If I told you I shot a 91, it would be the first nine holes. I'm that bad. Yeah, I am bad. If I get the ball off the tee, it is a miracle of God himself. I'm that bad. And I got to go play golf on Friday. Golf was always my excuse to day drink when I was in law school. I mean, I worked for a law firm where they would have these big fancy parties and all the unopened liquor bottles could go back to the liquor store, but the beer couldn't. And so they would give it to me and I would load up my refrigerator. I had just a beer fridge. And my friends and I, we would go load up a cooler and go hit golf balls in the afternoons. We all used part of our student loans to get our golf course memberships, which is probably why 20 years later, I'm still paying on my student loans. And I got great at drinking and terrible at golf. But nonetheless, I digress. I'm intimidated. Rush Limbaugh, when he was alive, always told me if I could get good, we could play. I never wanted, he at one point told me I could come play golf with him. And I just told him, no, you don't understand how terrible I am. I could not play golf with you. You would never, ever want to speak to me again. And he said, fine, when you get good at golf, we'll play around. And I never got good enough. I felt like to want to play with him, which is kind of, I regret that now. I really do regret it now. But I just never, I'm a terrible golfer, but gosh, I love to be on the golf course. I'm terrible at it, but I love to go out there, take a glass of bourbon with me or a beer and a good, really good cigar and hang out with some friends of mine who I don't regularly get to see and just catch up on life together as we all suck. But gosh, I apologize in advance for the language I will be using on the golf course because that is when I sound worse than a sailor. Israeli archaeologists have found a toilet. There's a punchline there, I guess. No, it's actually, and thank you. I forget who sent me this. A listener, Patrick sent me this. Israeli archaeologists have found a rare ancient toilet that is 2,700 or more years old, where private bathrooms were a real luxury in the Holy City.
It's fascinating. Animal bones and pottery found in the septic tank could shed light on the lifestyle. The archaeologists found stone capitals and columns from the area. There's evidence of a nearby orchard having been present. This was a polished, carved limestone toilet found in a rectangular cabin, part of a sprawling mansion overlooking what is now the old city. It was designed for comfortable sitting and had a deep septic tank dug underneath, more than 2,700 years old. Really just, I'm always amazed by this. So, you know, there's a story in the Bible of the King Hezekiah. And one of the stories recounted in, I think it's 2 Kings, was that he took the altars of Baal in Bethel and converted them to public toilets. It is a random small anecdote that exists in the Old Testament that Hezekiah converted the altars of Baal into public toilets in Bethel. And it's just kind of a throwaway thing. All right, yeah, he's getting rid of it. About 5 years ago, they were found. That it just blows your mind. That stuff, little throwaway stories you hear in the Bible. Archaeologists a few years ago in an area that used to historically be Bethel, they were digging into the gates of Bethel, where it says at the gates of Bethel, the altars of Baal were turned into the public toilets. And sure enough, they find public toilets and the seal of Hezekiah with an inscription that they had been the altars of Baal. And there you go. These sorts of stories fascinate me. There's another one that fascinates me, and I really, 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 really want you to pay attention to this one, because we need to praise CNN. I am a former independent contractor, not an employee. I worked there for 3 years, and I've been very critical of CNN over the last number of years. I think CNN has gone just too far left in its coverage. I thought it's very notable that Brian Stelter, who is their media critic, will not cover the allegations about Chris Cuomo sexually harassing his former boss at ABC News. You and I both know that if Brian worked for another network or it was about another network, he would cover it. But because it's CNN, he won't cover it, and he is in damage control. I remember when Howard Kurtz was at CNN, and Howard Kurtz would cover critical stories about CNN. Brian does not. And I don't think that's him. I think he's in an unfortunate position where he is kind of used by CNN now to cover for the network. And so I have criticisms of the network, but they deserve incredible, incredible, incredible praise. CNN is running a story about a Chinese defector who documents the torture against the Uyghurs. This is from Rebecca Wright, Ivan Watson, and Zahid Mahmood, and Tom Booth of CNN. The raid started after midnight in Xinjiang. Hundreds of police officers armed with rifles went house to house in Uyghur communities in the far western region of China, pulling people from their homes, handcuffing and hooding them, and threatening to shoot them if they resisted, a former CNN police detective tells CNN. We took them all forcibly overnight, he said. If there were hundreds of people in one county in this area, then you had to arrest these hundreds of people. The ex-detective turned whistleblower asked to be identified only as Yang to protect his family members who remain in China. In a 3-hour interview with CNN conducted in Europe, where he is now in exile, Zhang revealed rare details on what he described as a systematic campaign of torture against ethnic Uyghurs in the region's detention camp system, claims China has denied for years. Kick them, beat them until they're bruised and swollen, Zhang said, recalling how he and his colleagues used to interrogate detainees in police detention facilities, until they kneel on the floor crying. During his time in Xinjiang, Zhang said every new detainee was beaten until the interrogation process. During the interrogation process, including men, women, and children as young as 14. The methods included shackling people to a metal or wooden tiger chair, chairs designed to immobilize suspects, hanging people from the ceiling, sexual violence, electrocutions, and waterboarding. Inmates were often forced to stay awake for days and denied food and water. Everyone used different methods. Some even used a wrecking bar or iron chains with locks. Police would step on the suspect's face and tell him to confess. The suspects were accused of terror offenses, said Zhang, but he believes that none of the hundreds of prisoners he was involved in arresting had committed a crime. They're ordinary people, he said. The torture in police detention centers only stopped when the suspect confessed, Zhang said. Then they were usually transferred to another facility like a prison or an internment camp manned by prison guards. In order to help verify his testimony, Zhang told CNN, showed CNN his police uniform, official documents, photographs, videos, identification from his time in China, most of which can't be published to protect his identity. CNN has submitted detailed questions to the Chinese government. CNN cannot independently confirm Zhang's claims, but multiple details of his recollections echo the experiences of two Uyghur victims CNN interviewed for the report. More than 50 former inmates of the camp system provided testimony to Amnesty International for a 160-page report released in June. Like we were enemies in a war, China's mass internment, torture, and persecution of Muslims in Xinjiang, as the report called. The U.S. State Department estimates up to 2 million Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities have been detained. And the story goes on and on and on and is more and more and more horrific. If you want people to confess, you use the electric baton with two sharp tips on top, Zhang said. We would tie two electrical wires on the tips and set the wires on their genitals while the person is tied up. He admitted he would play the bad cop. Some people see this as a job. Some are just psychopaths, he said. One very common measure of torture and dehumanization was for guards to order prisoners to rape and abuse the new male inmates. Abduwili Ayyep, a 48-year-old Uyghur scholar from Xinjiang, said he was detained on August 19, 2013, when police picked him up at the Uyghur kindergarten he helped open and teach young people their native language. They drove him to a nearby house. He was surrounded by police carrying rifles. On his first night, he was gang-raped by more than a dozen Chinese inmates who had been directed to do this by three or four prison guards who witnessed the assault. The police guards, they asked me to take off my underwear. "Don't do this," I cried. "Please don't do this." This is remarkable reporting, made more remarkable for a particular fact you need to know. CNN is still, though being sold, CNN is still owned by Warner Brothers. Warner Media. Warner Media owns Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers wants access to the Chinese box office. Because of CNN's reporting, China could deny Warner Brothers access to China's market. You saw this with ESPN. ESPN is owned by Disney, as is ABC News. And ABC News and ESPN downplayed the Hong Kong protests of the democracy movement. ESPN, every time there was an NBA game after the NBA players refused to speak out on China, every time people would show signs in support of Hong Kong, ESPN would abruptly remove the camera, tried to confiscate the signs, and would throw people out who wanted to stand up and defend the people of Hong Kong, because ESPN knew, because Disney knew, that China would block Disney's box office hits from China. And Disney is way more interested in money than principle. And so word, I'm sure, came down from on high, don't you make the Chinese look bad, you'll hurt us. And so ESPN wouldn't cover the protests. ESPN never talked about the story of the NBA making money off of China, condemning Americans' civil rights and not saying a thing about what was happening in China. Because they didn't want to hurt Disney's box office. CNN actually deserves tremendous and remarkable credit for covering this story. It is worth me spending this time with you here now. It is worth all of us appreciating the fact that an American news network that all of us very frequently criticize has done something that, yes, is brave. It is brave because the people who did this could lose their jobs for angering the corporate overlords at Warner by costing them box office access in China. It is brave because they are covering something that puts a target on them by Chinese authorities. It is brave because a lot of news networks would wilt under the pressure of the Chinese mob and social media disinformation campaign that will come from this. And we should appreciate that an American news network that so often these days has seemed to be partisan and of the left is willing to stand up for the people who can't stand up for themselves in China. And we need to know this is happening. On the left in the United States right now, there is increasing growing fascination with China. Their trains run on time. They build buildings so quickly. Their infrastructure works. Things just work in China. We hear that all the time. Things can work on the backs of forced labor and torture and brutality. Our system of government is not efficient. It's not designed to be efficient. It sometimes gets us to the point where we're having conversations about, should we just break apart the country? Have we gone on too long? People give up on our system. They think maybe there's something better out there. The Chinese system is what the alternative is in the Western world today. And it's a terrible, brutal regime. And we all need reminders that evil exists and that evil is the Chinese Communist Party, among other things. And China willfully pressures American news outlets that are owned by major movie company studios not to cover China. And Disney folded, ESPN folded, ABC News folded, CNN, which is owned by Warner, refused to fold. They're revealing the monstrosities of the regime, and they deserve a lot of credit for doing this. They deserve a lot of credit, and China deserves a lot of condemnation. These people, the government at least, are monsters. They are evil. And if we don't speak clearly and stand up, they're going to start spreading out around the world. They're going to go after Taiwan, but they're already saying they're going to put naval ships in the Gulf of Mexico. And we need to be mindful of the fact they want to be a growing superpower that wants to do us in. And this is what it looks like when they do in a people. We need to stand up. Hi there. There's some breaking news happening right now. I've talked about this story a little esoteric for some of you. I realize the Southern Baptist Convention, they've got a executive committee. It's a chartered corporation in Tennessee. They were ordered by the members of the Southern Baptist Convention to waive attorney-client privilege, and two separate meetings refused to do so, despite being told they needed to by the messengers of the SBC. They've just, in the last 10 minutes, voted 44-31 in favor of waiving attorney-client privilege, which will allow an investigation into the executive committee's handling of sex abuse allegations within the Southern Baptist Church, which is a very big deal. There have been a number of allegations within that denomination that the executive committee of the SBC knew about or should have known or engaged or complicit in covering up allegations about sexual abuse at some entities overseen by the executive committee. And the executive committee had refused to waive attorney-client privilege until today. Part of their delay was dealing with insurance issues. In some situations, if you do things like waive attorney-client privilege, your insurer says, well, you didn't mitigate your risk, therefore we're not going to cover any sort of insurance claims. But they finally decided to act and listen to the will of the people of the Southern Baptist Convention, and they deserve great praise for standing up and doing that. I know it was very trying for these folks to do that. And it, who knows where the chips are going to fall on this? And it's probably going to be brutal, and people will need to exercise some grace. But I'm glad they did it. I'm very glad they did it. All right, folks, I'm out of time today. I will be back with you guys tomorrow. Mitt Romney, you should know, in just the last 30 seconds, has said he's going to filibuster the debt ceiling increase, and so is Susan Collins. And if Mitt Romney and Susan Collins are doing that, it means the GOP is not going to cave to the Democrats. I'm glad to be wrong on that. They need to stand firm and filibuster the debt ceiling increase. Y'all, from the moment I sat in my X chair, my body said, this is what a real office chair is supposed to be like. I had gone through office chairs, and then I got my X chair, and it is the perfect chair. In fact, my X chair, unlike your chair, can massage my back while I'm sitting doing 3 hours of talk radio. It can even heat up and cool down depending on my office, which tends to run hot in the summer and cold in the wintertime. And it's all in the LMX massage and temperature regulation exclusively designed for the X chair. And once you feel the customized support of X chair's patented dynamic lumbar DVL, they call it dynamic variable lumbar, your back's going to be happy. What I need you to do, you got to go check out the X chair. Cause yeah, I bought the, y'all know the expensive brand and I bought it. It was a good chair. It actually was a really good chair. And X chair takes it to the next level. What you need to do is go to xchaireric.com now. That's X, the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com, or call 844-4-X-CHAIR for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. You can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. It's xchaireric, E-R-I-C-K.com. It is worth it.